Hey everyone, welcome to the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. I'm your host, Meg Ricci. I am a women's integrative health practitioner and acupuncturist, and my mission is to help you, to help women demystify their hormonal issues and struggles and the many things that dance in between that I refer to as the dust balls of life, because there's always something rolling across the floor. So I just want to take a moment right now, and I want to thank all my loyal listeners. Thank you so much for hanging out with me over the past few years. I've made 52 episodes. Some people have probably made 300 in the amount of time I did. But, you know, I'm just so delighted that I can show up when I do. And I try to be really thoughtful when I put together these podcasts. And I love the reviews. Thank you so much. And I love that people are reaching out to me and telling me how much they enjoy the podcast. So if you are new, and if you have not subscribed, please do on iTunes and Spotify. And if you'd like to find out more about me and the possibility of working with me, you can find all my contact information on my website, megricci.com. I would be delighted to set up a discovery call with you and see if we're a good fit for one another. So again, thank you, sweet listeners. Get a cup of tea. Relax, enjoy, because this is going to be such a fun conversation today. As a matter of fact, I don't even have an outline for it. That's how much fun this is going to be. A great conversation. You know, what I try to do in this podcast is I want to help people get to the root cause and causes of health issues and different struggles that that women are facing. And I want to make sure that you can make the best informed decisions by getting the right information. And I tried to provide some of that for people. So hopefully the Hormone Lifestyle Zone is setting you on the right track. You know, and I try to give you information that I provide to my clients in my clinical practice. And one of the things that I say to people, and I think this is something to really think about, nobody wakes up one day with chronic fatigue syndrome. Nobody wakes up one day with endometriosis or fibroids or joint pain. Nobody wakes up one day feeling depressed. There's something else going on. What's going on that could be triggering your symptoms? What's going on in your life? And it's a lot of times it's the lifestyle choices. There are environmental factors that are involved, maybe exposure to viruses. There are a variety of factors, but also what comes into play are our thoughts, the way that we're thinking. So here's something interesting to think about, of just being in that negative space of negative thoughts of, I don't like my job, I don't like the people I work with, and just that constant negative vibe going on in your brain is equivalent to you getting chemical exposure in the way that it impacts your immune system. So a chemical exposure or a bacterial infection or negative thoughts can it negatively impact your immune system in the same way. And I think that's really important for people to realize. It's not all the vitamins and supplements. Those are very important. But how are we thinking? How are we moving through life? How do we feel about the lives that we are leading? So today, I want to explore a different avenue with you. I want to talk about our overall health, but in terms of our soul, our life purpose. Are we honoring that? Are we going within to get the answers that we need? Do we pay attention to those little whispers that we hear in our ear that will say, hey, you know what? Maybe it's time to look for another job. And you turn around, you're like, who said that? And that little inner voice is screaming at you eventually, you have to leave your job. And I'll just share one story with you. I was working for a small boutique design studio down in Soho. I hated that job. No matter what I did, I never could get ahead. And I remember I pulled an all-nighter and on a Friday night, and then on Saturday, I was supposed to go to the opera with a friend. And I was exhausted. My brain was rattled and numb. And we went out to dinner, went to the opera, and we were sitting up in the mezzanine. And I kind of lost my balance. And I held onto the railing because I thought I was going to fall over the balcony. And I whacked the side of my head. And I went, oh my God, this really hurts. Well, a few days later, I was at work and I got a delayed concussion. And I decided after that I was in the hospital. I had to stay with a friend for a few days. I remember trying to cross the street to go to the bank, and I didn't even know how to navigate my way across the street. And I realized I was not navigating my life in the way that I needed to. And I quit my job. I had nothing lined up. And what happened about a year and a half later, I started listening to that inner voice, and I ended up being in school for acupuncture. So it's funny how things happen in life and you're like, wait a minute, I need a reset. Today, I have an exquisite guest. She is a very dear friend. I've known her for over 20 years. Her name is Agnieszka Gasparska. And I don't even know where to start. I just adore her. We were introduced, around 22 years ago. And she was introduced to me by Timo Ellis, who's a musician. He actually recorded a CD for me at that time. And I said, I need someone who's going to help me design a website. I hated what I had. And he said, I have the perfect person. So I reached out to Agnieszka and she said, can I come to your house? I want to see the colors in your house. I want to see what resonates with you so I can create this website. And I went, oh my God, I love this woman. I was an art director. I was a designer before I became an acupuncturist. So over the years, she's designed so many things for me, and we've become good friends, and we've traveled together, and we've gone to webinars and seminars together, and we've sat together and dealt with each other's breakups and would stay up at night and tell stories, and I just love her. And I said, Agnieszka, you've got to come on the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. I've been asking her for 4 years. I want you to share your story because she has a way of moving through life that just I find incredibly magical. This woman was born in Warsaw in 1977 under the communist regime. And after repeated attempts to escape with her parents, and they decided to give it one last shot before they arrived in New York City in the fall of 1988. She came here with her mother and father and her brother, and it was almost exactly 1 year before the fall of the Berlin Wall. So she had to start her life and learn English at the age of 11 in Queens, New York, and I'm going to have her share her story. But Agnieszka is an artist and educator. She is a designer with 20 plus years of experience in visual communication and digital design. She graduated from Cooper Union. Cooper Union is one of the most amazing schools. I attended the School of Visual Arts. It's one of the most prestigious art schools in the United States. And if you get accepted, you get a full scholarship. She's going to tell you the story about that. And she is the founder and creative captain, as she refers to herself, of Kiss Me on Polish. And I love this. She's the only Polish member on her staff. So I want her here because I want her to share her story. I want her to share. It's a beautiful. Her life is really exquisite. And I love how she moves through the bumps and the losses along the way, and she's had some magical things happen to her. And the reason I wanted to do this podcast today, because so many of us right now are struggling. We're struggling with our lives. We don't know where our life purpose is, how to find our life purpose, how do we navigate it. We're in a spiritual crisis. And this is a time, I feel, of the awakening of the divine feminine more deeply than ever. The masculine is, how are we putting ourselves out in the world? What are we producing? And what are we doing? And what are we accomplishing? It's depleting us. It's not balancing. But when we go inward, when we can find that place within ourself that we can hear those inner whispers, that is our soul speaking to us. That is the feminine. That is the mother. That is the essence that wants you to give birth to your highest self. So, sweet Agnieszka, I'm going to start crying. I want to welcome you to the Hormone Lifestyle Zone, my love. Hi, honey. Oh,
thank you. I'm already teary-eyed, and we were basically 5 minutes in.
It's true.
Thank you. It's so amazing to be here. I know it's been a long time coming, yeah. But I think here's a testament to timing. Timing is everything. And right. I feel like in this moment, this felt like the perfect moment to connect and have this conversation. So thank you for your patience and your perseverance. And here we are.
I want you to start with, you know, I said this to you, what would life have been like if you stayed in Poland? You said, I don't know. And I'm sure it would be somewhat a version of what you have right now. But can you share your story of what it was like moving to this country and starting out anew and being called Agnes?
Yes. So as most very, you know, good immigrants of the time did, you translate your name when you arrive to the place that you are immigrating to. And, you know, Agnieszka is, there are lots of very complicated names in Polish. The Polish people love their triple consonant sequences. So Agnieszka is not one of the easier ones. And so there was not even a question of not using that name when we first arrived. And so, yeah, I became Agnes. And, you know, that just seemed like something to do. And, you know, it's funny, Queens has a very, people in Queens have a specific way of speaking. So often it wasn't just Agnes, it was Agnes. And that was just, you know, it's all good. It's all good. It was just, it was part of the process of kind of landing and integrating into another reality. And I think, you know, for me, I was really young. My brother was 2 years younger than me. It was exciting. It was new. It had, you know, it was the third time my parents tried to move to another country. So I think we were really curious and excited. I think for my parents, it was an entirely different journey. They, as two adults caring for two young children, immigrating to a place where there was no family to fall back on. There was just the kindness of friends and strangers. I think that journey was extremely stressful and very difficult. So I think it was, you know, it was kind of like a, I can't imagine. I mean, my parents were in their 40s when they moved, and to start from scratch, basically, you know, people do all kinds of crazy things, and people have done a lot of much more complex and more difficult things to create a better life for themselves and their families. So we had it easy by comparison, I think. But yeah, I think it was an entirely different fabric of reality to fit into, to figure out. The social constructs were totally different. The principles of the United States, and especially New York and life in New York, were totally different. And when you ask me what my life would have been like if we had stayed in Poland, who knows? I think there are also different, you know, I have family still in Poland. I have friends still in Poland who are, you know, the same age as me. So I've watched their lives evolve. And who knows? I mean, Poland as a country has a very different value system, although, you know, my parents and our kind of community are much more kind of curious and open-minded than the kind of the typical regime. But I think that one of the things that we have this conversation all the time with my mom and my brother, you know, one of the things that I think is the biggest asset of moving is just the how open your life became. It was terrifying to kind of have this openness and this vastness that a new life in New York City kind of made available. But I think that both my brother and I have created a life for ourselves entirely our own and entirely of the things that called to us and interested us, and just is so multifaceted, so diverse and complex, and there's so much freedom in our lives that in and of itself is kind of the essence, I think, of what made this journey so different, is just the ability to kind of create a life that doesn't follow a kind of a predetermined path. So, yeah.
So what got you into, so you had a real craving for or interest in science and the arts. Mm-hmm. And I just, how did you... I can't believe you went to Cooper Union. If anyone here is a designer, you'll know that Cooper Union is a difficult school to get into. And it actually does set you, I mean, it can really open doors for you. So just share how you that school came about, because I didn't realize it. You had a green card. When did you become a citizen?
I became a citizen in, I think, 2006, maybe. I have to check.
You never, really?
But it was a long time. It was a long struggle to get all of our paperwork squared away.
It took that long from 88 to 2006 for mm-hmm. you to become a citizen?
Mm-hmm.
I just learned something new. I didn't know that.
Doesn't always take that long, but it's not always easy.
Did you have any threat of being sent back?
Yes. There was definitely the first 10 years that we were here in the States, we were not allowed to leave. Because if we had left, we would have been not able to get back in. Mm-hmm. We were pending visas, all these things. There was never a threat of being deported. There was just kind of this sitting and waiting for the paperwork to get squared away. So when my grandmother passed away, my mom's mother, she couldn't go back for the funeral because she wouldn't have been able to get back in the country. But the Cooper Union twist was one of the biggest kind of, you know, you mentioned this in your opening, you know, how life sometimes just kind of shakes our head and like, you know, puts your head towards something and says, look at this, pay attention. Like, this is worth looking at or tuning into, even though your head's like, no, this doesn't make sense or this doesn't fit in. So my journey with Cooper Union and getting into Cooper Union was one of those biggest examples. You know, being an artist was not something that was on the table as a career option. Not only just due to my upbringing, due to the fact that, you know, we were a family of immigrants. So really kind of creating a steady livelihood and kind of the survival of an immigrant family is not like, oh, great, go be an artist. I also didn't really want to be an artist. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't necessarily know that this would, I didn't understand all of the ways that a creative life could unfold. So yes, and I had a very strong affinity for math and science. I was a big nerd. I took all the
not
AP classes.
My area.
I love it.
I would cry. I was so bad at math. And chemistry?
I loved it. I loved it. It just was, there's a way that my brain just loves that kind of problem solving and that kind of digesting mm-hmm. of information. And of course, it's not a coincidence because it's found its way into my artwork.
Oh my gosh. You know, I looked at, and I will include your website. I looked at your portfolio on your website and I had not realized in how much you were up to in the world and what you're doing, which is pretty global. So yeah, please continue.
So big nerd, lots of science and math. And I also always had a strong draw towards art making. It was something that I did in my free time. It was a way that I loved to explore and play and experiment. If I had the space to just sit and draw, I loved it. I was an adolescent kind of dealing with like, you know, puberty and emotions and the volatile roller coaster of being a teenager. Making artwork was really kind of an amazing outlet. So it was always something I wanted to do. So my dream at the time was to go to a big university, big liberal arts college that had a strong science academic program, and then I would minor in art. And I applied to 9 colleges. And at the time, I didn't have a green card. I was not a permanent resident. So I was applying for a lot of financial aid because I needed it. And also, I was under the wing of this art teacher in my public New York City high school in Queens, who was kind of a renegade and had this little inner sanctum of kids that he saw promise in and really encouraged us in a very strong way to really pursue our artistic kind of talents and sent us all to Cooper Union on Saturday mornings to take drawing classes for free. And so I'd be getting up at like 7 a.m. on a Saturday, sitting on the subway for, you know, bus and a subway for like an hour and a half to get to Cooper Union and spend my Saturdays there. So when it came time to apply to schools, Mr. Potter was his name, pretty much dared all of those students of his to
what
take
was his
the
first name?
Mr. Douglas Potter.
Okay, because I had a teacher named Potter too.
He is still somebody I think about all the time.
Wow. Okay.
So he dared all of us to do the home test because we all knew the home test to get into a scholarship program at Cooper Union. It was very difficult. And it was almost like he said to us, you know, if you consider yourself an artist, even just in your heart, like prove to yourself what you're capable of. Just do it for yourself, to do it for yourself. And the Cooper Union home test consists of 5 prompts that you get in the mail, and you have a month to create custom work based on these 5 prompts.
I got that application. I did not fill it out.
They're insane.
Yes,
they're like,
they
you're
are. I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah. You know, you're like a 17-year-old high school student and you get these prompts and it says, you know, habitat, go. time and change, make something. I mean, they're amazing. So the process of doing this work was really incredible. And so I did it. I did it like I was like down to the wire. I was up all week finishing, finishing the final work. I literally had to take the subway in to drop it off before the 5 p.m. drop off because I had missed the mailing deadline. So I like ran to Cooper with my home test, like packaging it up on the train, gave it in and put it out of my mind. And started to get my kind of reply letters from colleges, and the school that I got into that I wanted to go to offered me significant financial aid, but I wasn't eligible for it because I wasn't a permanent resident of the United States. So I would have had to take a big loan. And lo and behold, middle of April, probably a week or two after right now, I get a phone call saying that I got into Cooper, and I almost like dropped the phone because I didn't even, it had been completely not even on my radar.
That's so wild.
Yeah. And then became this debate because Cooper Union offered a full scholarship. So the universe figured out a way to dangle this carrot in front of me and in front of my family. You know, my parents looking out for me obviously didn't necessarily want me to go to art school, but we all agreed that I would do it for a year. And then after a year, I'd have my green card and transfer to another school. And, you know, one of the things about Cooper Union that's amazing too, is that it's an art school that's conjoined with an architecture school. My dad is an architect. Mm-hmm. And an engineering school. My mom is an engineer. So it's like this entire trifecta was accounted for. Yeah. And they were curious. And, you know, I got into Cooper, started going to classes. And within a couple of weeks, I was like, I'm never leaving. This is the most amazing thing. So yeah. That was a twist, and it changed the course of my life, and I'm so grateful.
So keep threading your life story, because there's, well, we can start and move backwards. I mean, you've been on, and I don't want to say a soul path. I think when people hear spiritual path, they think many different things, but you've always been on your soul's path, and I feel that, you know, for me, the soul, like, what is our, you know, why are we here? What are the experiences? We are a culmination in this moment of every experience that has led us to where we are. You left the country, you went to Cooper Union, you started working for some really fun agency. What was it? Garbage? I remember.
Funny garbage.
Funny garbage, which yes. I think is interesting. You worked for Funny Garbage.
Why do you think I called my business Kiss Me on Polish? I learned what it means to have an interesting name.
And then I do think it's interesting how your own design studio was in the East Village in a Polish neighborhood.
Yes.
And I used to live over in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When did you start seeing a connection, or did you always have a connection to spirit? What did it feel like when you were in college? Was there any awareness of that?
There started to be an awareness. I feel like it's over the years, it's something that has felt like it's getting clearer and stronger. I think that, you know, in college, it was the first time I lived out of the house, and I grew up in a Catholic household, not like a very rigid Catholic household, but as a, you know, good Polish family, we were Catholic. And, you know, and the spirituality in that sense was definitely a part of my upbringing. And it felt very meaningful and very deep. Yeah. When I was in college and kind of stopped being under that construct so much and was independent and was free to do my own thing on Sundays, I no longer felt that draw. And so I started kind of exploring other avenues and other ways that I felt that kind of resonance. And, you know, it came in very subtle ways. I mean, I remember going to like a really amazing yoga class and feeling something in a yoga class, you know, there was a moment of meditation or something. So it was just kind of dabbling in the sense of some other sense awareness. And I think it's just something that has taken shape more strongly over the years. You know, every so often, you know, when I already was running my business and would have these periods of being incredibly exhausted, like you said, your opera story, that's so insane. Thankfully, I can't even imagine how tired you must have been, but I can relate. Thankfully, I never gave myself a concussion, but I was pretty burnt out. And so there would be times where I would just treat myself, you know, I had a car, so I would drive out of the city for a few days and just sit quietly in the woods or something and do nothing or draw or just be. And you know, and that was kind of self-guided. So I was kind of starting to move in that direction of just giving that myself that kind of space to just be. And that was very fleeting, very little, but still really, really important. And then I think in 2012, I had a very, very dear friend that invited me to a meditation class here in the city at a really kind of contemporary Buddhist center. And I was going through some really difficult stuff at the time. And I had just had a very tricky weekend and I was exhausted. It was like a Monday night and I was at work. And her selling point to get me to this class was like, honey, I promise you're going to sleep like a baby after this class. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll go. And so I went, and that was sort of the beginning of having a more formal exploration of, yeah, just an awareness an awareness of being and your mind, kind of what your mind can do and where your mind goes automatically, and just kind of training the mind, I guess, or just allowing the mind to have space to just settle and tune into something else.
So you were in 2011-12, I think you had said to me earlier, this was your first exposure to Buddhist meditation. So how did life start changing? Because it did, because this is where it gets interesting.
It did. Well, it still is.
Yeah. And is this when you met, I mean, you can share what you want. I remember you going through a breakup. I think I was going through a breakup at the same time. But you, when did you meet, and I just forgot his name, that from Spain?
I'd rather not talk about specific names.
No, I don't want to give names. Yes. I'm sorry. The person from Spain. You know what I mean. I'm not giving names.
That was a few years later.
Okay. So what started happening in 12?
So I think in 12, you know, and these things happen so slowly. I think one of the beauties of, one of the gifts, I think, of kind of preparing for this conversation with you was you asking me to write an outline of my life. And I mentioned this to you. It was one of the most profound things to do. I feel like I've done it in some capacity here and there, but to kind of look back and see these moments in life where like tiny little things happen and they just kind of pivot, like your life kind of pivots in a slightly different direction. And then you look back 10 years later and everything has changed. So, and then there's big things that happen, like a big whack or a big crash that I think I call them cracks, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just pulled it up right now.
So I feel like this moment of starting to explore this meditation practice was just one little drop in kind of a bigger pool of things that were starting to shift. And, you know, it's been, it would be a few years before the shift was visible. You know, at that time in 2011, 2012, up until probably 2016, as I mentioned to you, was the most intense, exhausting, overwhelming, rewarding, but insane time in my life where my business was the biggest it was ever in its history. You know, six people, but still, that's a lot. Yes.
When you started out in a tiny little room in the East Village.
In a storefront. Yeah.
A storefront. I love that place. That was.
I love that place too.
But I do remember coming up to your studio because I was living in Charleston and I would fly up to New York and I would see clients and you were just so overwhelmed. And I mean,
it was crazy. And, you know, I was running a business, I was teaching, I was on the board of an organization. And, you know, as I mentioned to you, like, at the time, you're doing these things because you're building a business. And I looked around and everybody else who I knew who was running a business was doing the same thing. Yeah. So you're like, this is what you have to be doing. And there was a part of me inside that was just screaming, like, this is exhausting, unsustainable. I mean, I literally looked back at my timesheets. I would be working like 50, 60 hour weeks, which seems like the norm for a lot of
people. It is the norm. I mean,
it is the norm.
And that, I mean, which is kind of sad because a lot of people are working more hours than that. And if I can just interject, one of the reasons I left New York in 13 is because I was burnt out. I was fried. I was similar to you. And this inner voice is like, it's time, you need to go. No, I left in 14. It was 10 years ago. And in 13, my mother had passed away in December. And that's when I was like, you know what? I can go now. Because I lived, you know, I lived near my mom and it was time to leave. And I kept seeing in my mind's eye, palm trees, water, and riding my bike. And editing a lot out, I ended up moving to Charleston. I didn't have a driver's license, so I had to ride a bike to work. And I lived in a historic area. And what I kept hearing on my bike, and what I kept hearing is, for the first 3-4 months, they said, all you need to do is just go for walks and go out for coffee. That's all you got to do. And that's what I did. And it was like the first time I gave myself permission. And eventually I started seeing clients. But I was, I hear you. I was absolutely fried. And it took me about 2 years to completely reset from being in New York.
Yeah. So it just was kind of the norm. And look, there's a lot of beauty in it. There's a lot of meaning in that kind of experience. You know, it's, we get a lot done, but it's just, when I think about it now, you know, that just, there's just no space for you to recharge, replenish, and just really be and fully connect with your life. So I think that going back to your question about how things started to change, it was several years until some of the kind of ripples of, you know, I think the more I allowed myself to feel certain kind of, to feel myself, like I would once in a while go on a retreat to the temple upstate. And I love that the first time I went on a meditation retreat to the temple upstate was 2013, 2014, maybe. I'm trying to remember, maybe 2014. And I went for my birthday, and my birthday's in January, and they do these beautiful winter retreats. The week before this retreat was the actual, my actual birthday. I worked 3 all-nighters in a row, including on my birthday. And then I went onto this retreat and I was just like, what the hell am I doing? Like, what is happening? My life is so out of balance. And then I went on this retreat and just kind of like really collapsed and had a very different experience. And it was really beautiful. But so these two polar opposites of my life were starting to kind of, I don't know, like the two extremes were starting to clash and create this energy. And so, yeah, I think I just kept going from one extreme to the other, from one extreme to the other. And it took a, you know, it's still something I think I'm navigating in other ways, but it was like, they just needed to, like, this new reality, this new way of being was starting to emerge. And then I would swing back to like the insane work mode. And then a little bit of some calm and peace, and then insane work mode. And then, you know, all of a sudden they started to balance, but it took years.
And you came to see me during that time for acupuncture.
Of course I did. Oh, I did. I needed help. I would be with like, so many things.
Honey, you're really burnt out. And you're like, I know, I'm trying to figure it out. And it takes a while to figure these things out. But I'm just looking through here. When did you made a big decision. You're done with the big office.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm going to Brooklyn and I'm going to get a smaller office right around the block from the Con Ed plant.
Well, that was short lived. That was thankfully only 5 years next to the power plant.
Right to the power plant.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That happened in the spring of 2016, and that was 2 years after my month kind of break and walkabout in New Mexico, which I had done because I was so burnt out. So there was a moment in 2016 where, you know, again, all these things were building, like one thing after another after another. And yeah, we were working on this project that was like this high profile project that was very enticing. And we were working really, really hard kind of to get this job. And I think we had it. We were working with another team. And all of a sudden, just like that, overnight, the project just went poof, just went away. And it didn't really even matter. But that one moment was like the last kind of drop where I was, or the last straw, or whatever you want to call it, the spark, where I was just like, oh, hell no. Like, this is like, I'm chasing this thing and it's so volatile and it can change at any moment. And what the hell? No. And in that kind of moment, I just said, something's got to change. Like, this is just not sustainable. And yeah, I became aware of the kind of the massive load of what I was holding, this staff, this office, this kind of trying to be and do it a certain way. And something cracked, like another thing cracked, another part of that status quo cracked. And as always is the case, I've learned this so many times. You say something out loud, you become aware of something, and little things start to show up that you can kind of listen to and pay attention. And I literally was like, I think it's time to move the office. I think it's time to kind of streamline things and make this less overwhelming. And we had a colleague that we were working with all the time that was in an office space in a storefront in Dumbo. And she emailed me and she's like, hey, if you know anybody, we're looking to share, to have somebody move into our office and share our office, like literally around this time. And I was like, no. So I was like, well, let's talk, because, you know, there's six of us at the time, or we were five at the time or something, you know, how are we going to make this work? So we met for coffee and we looked around the space and decided that we were going to do it and kind of do some construction to help it fit all of us. And I was there for 5 years. I was there until we were there until the pandemic. You know, it was a difficult decision because it felt, I remember processing that decision for months after that because it felt counterintuitive. My head and my ego were like, you're not going up, 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 up. You're not going ahead, ahead, ahead. You're going backwards or like sideways. Right. Like, why are you doing that? Like, you had this amazing office and, you know, it was cool and you were in Chelsea and all, like, my ego was really not having it. Like, you're going sideways. And it took me a while to process it, but like in my gut and in my heart, which I, you know, at the time was trying to figure out what that actually felt like and sounded like, it was so clear. I knew I had to do that. It's just that my mind was really struggling accepting this decision. And now looking back on it, it's the best thing I could have done. Like, it opened up so many other things and it just shifted something.
So you trusted your gut.
Yes, but it wasn't pretty and it wasn't easy.
No, but it's really hard. I mean, it is. Sometimes your gut will say it and you're like, what? And then you do it.
No, I don't want to hear it.
I was like, oh. You know, if I can share, when I first started practicing acupuncture, and I've been working out of a chiropractor's office in Brooklyn Heights near my home, and I was very fortunate. He said to me, oh, you can work out of my office for free for the next 6 months until you build a practice. Who does that?
I know. That's
and
amazing.
So I was working there. And so there was a trip that came up to go to Vietnam the following year. And it was like, I don't know, $4,500. And I had did not have a pot to piss in at that point. And I thought, and I just said, wow, you know, that would be really awesome if I could do that. And I let it go. A few days later, client comes in, says, hey, Meg, I got a $5,000 check from no fault, serious, no fault insurance. I want to give you this check. Or she had written out. I said, why? She said, so I can come and see you anytime for acupuncture. And I thought, she'll be coming to me forever. And I went, really? She said, yeah, I'm going to give you this check. And that paid for my trip.
You can't make that up. You cannot. I hear about this all the time. And you're like,
so
that's nonsense.
I was like, and let me just share. So I went a year later in July of, I forget, the following year, I was on my way to Vietnam with 10 other colleagues to work in a hospital and clinic. I was excited. I think I just turned 40 that year. And I was also in a relationship and my partner at the time was thinking whether or not she wanted to stay with me. So I had to go to Vietnam and kind of put that on a shelf so she could have the time to think about it. So I had this amazing experience and I had to compartmentalize things. Editing a lot out. On the way back, I reached out to my partner to pick me up at the airport. She informed me that she was breaking up and moving out. Then I came back home with the worst Girardia. I lost 10 pounds.
God.
I no longer had an office. And I was up for a teaching position to work in the clinic at the school I graduated from for acupuncture. And I didn't get the position because someone had lied about me saying that I stole an exam the previous year and had given it out to students. And I, when all this happened within like, I don't know, 48 hours, and I knew, I said, holy crap, the beach blanket of life is preparing me for another stage. But I needed that money to go to Vietnam to have the most exquisite experience in my life on so many levels that I could have trust that inner voice to say, this is happening for a reason. I will do what I need to do. So a friend suggested I worked out of my own office. I had a separate entrance in my apartment. I started seeing clients. And what else went on? I just started finding ways to pursue to get other clients. I got back into therapy. I said, I need to take a deep dive and look at my shit. And I said, I will do whatever I can, whatever is needed of me, so that I can honor my path moving forward. But the $5,000 check, the trip, coming back, and my whole life being flung in the air.
Just everything had to be cleared out.
It had to be cleared. And I didn't blame. And I was like, oh my God, why is this happening to me? This is terrible.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what? It's happening for a reason. And I'm just going to roll with it. Because that's, I even have something from a little thing that we did on, we took a retreat. Something about, I allow the unfolding and the tumble and roll in life. Sometimes you just got to tumble and roll the shit.
Let it rip. You got to let it go.
So I share that with you because it didn't hit me until this morning. I went, wait a minute. I had that trip to Vietnam. That was my 4 weeks of prep work with extraordinary women and extraordinary practitioners. The dean of the hospital was the liaison between South Vietnam and Vietnam during the war.
Wow.
And he was an artist. And he was a doctor. I learned so much. So I share that because sometimes the twists and turns that seem so are the most incredible gifts we receive. So thank you for letting me. I'm so glad I could share that.
Well, I think we've all had those moments, right? Yeah. And it's amazing to be able to see them in hindsight and just be really fully aware of the ripple effects of those moments. And
Well, your
they
life
don't feel good in the moment.
No, it's well, because everything, you know, people look at life, you can either look at it as suffering or as an opportunity to move through something. And one
or
thing
both.
Or both. It's I mean, we lose people. Yes, it's human. But we're always going to lose people in our lives. They're going to they will pass in the way they do. We lose parents, we lose siblings, and it's not easy. I also know that I will see them again. I also know that they are with me. I feel your father at times when I'm talking to you. I felt his arm on my shoulder. So can you talk about your dad and how you left and you went back to Poland for 6 months? Can you talk about that?
Yes, I will try without.
It's okay.
And
I'm asking the sharing because this is part of.
Yes, this was a big one.
This was big.
And my dad is right there. It's his photo right there. And that's Edith right there below him. But that's where they sit on my desk. It was my dad's birthday yesterday. He would have been 78.
He would have been how old is, would you?
78.
78. Oh, wow.
I was very, very close with my father. My father was a very radiant, loving, funny, gentle, sweet soul. And I think, you know, we had a lot in common. My mother and my brother are both fierce Scorpios. Exactly. So my father and I were the kind of the other end of the spectrum in the family, the kind of softer, gentler end of the spectrum. But no, I joke. I digress. Anyway, so when he was in, I think he had just turned 70, he was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. And he was part of a research study here in New York. So he was put on immediately a kind of a research treatment. And, you know, the hope and the intention was that it would progress very, very slowly. And it did for a while. And then my parents decided to move back to Poland in 2019 because they felt that they would have just stronger support there, access to services. There was a beautiful new Alzheimer's center that had just opened in Warsaw that was government subsidized, that offered amazing activities and day activities. So my dad would start going there. And so they just, they decided to make that move and it made a lot of sense. And then the pandemic hit and locked everything down. And during the course of 2020, my dad's health just really nosedived. his condition really progressed. And in October 2020, after spending 3 months packing up and vacating our office in Dumbo, because I decided it was time to let the office go, I just traveled to Poland for an indefinite amount of time, knowing that my dad was not well and my mom was having a very difficult time. And so I went back to Poland in October. And by the end of December, December 30th, my father passed away. And I feel very grateful that I could be there for those few months. I stayed another 3 months after that. And it still feels like a very surreal experience. That year, obviously, 2020 goes down in history as one of the most surreal years of everybody's life who's alive right now. So on various different levels. And it was very intense, very, very intense. And, you know, being in Poland during that time, being with my father during that time, and kind of, yeah, just being in that experience, which is, I think, for a lot of us, one of the, I refer to it as one of the thresholds of life is to lose a parent, especially one you're very close to. And yeah, it was a very complex experience. I think one that I'm still probably integrating. And it, there were also so many gifts in it. Like the fact that I could just be there.
I was just going to ask you, what did you get? I mean, I know any time, and I've lost both parents, so I, there are gifts out of it that change us.
Mm, yeah.
What did you receive from that experience?
I think I received a lot of different things, some of which I, like I said, I think it's going to be a while still until I can fully see it and feel it. Mm-hmm. I think that there was a lot of heartbreak and a lot of loss. And in that experience, I feel like some part of me kind of opened up, something cracked, like another crack happened. And I think in that experience, it's hard to articulate because there's so many aspects to it. But I think that in that kind of experience of everything that an experience like that holds, I think that there are a few things I took away. One is, you know, and I don't want to try and summarize them in something very short and pithy, but, you know, life is so precious and so fleeting. And in a way, like it really, there was a certain desire that galvanized in me. It was like an out of the ashes of the pain and the loss and the grief, like some part of me just got so lit up. You know, I was feeling a lot of things, so I needed ways to channel those feelings. My dad was a runner. I had been a runner. I was a runner, like, you know, little bits here and there. I started training for a marathon in honor of my father, who had run several marathons. So there was just this kind of vitality that came through me. And part of it, I understand, you know, was a coping mechanism, but also the sense of like this life being a gift and how precious it is and how every one of us is going to die. I'm going to die. Yeah. And I want to make the most of what I have and the most of the life that I have. And so the other thing that kind of got birthed through that is I looked at my life and realized that there are things I have not done yet and things I have not tapped into in myself and ways that I want to live my life without putting anything on hold or waiting for later or thinking like, oh, I'll do that when I retire, because there's no guarantee. Like, I don't know what my life is going to look like. I don't know how long I'll be fully capable. So I started to really just kind of be guided by what makes me feel alive and what makes me feel like I'm really being, all the things, like being the fullest version of myself. So I also, you know, started making art more with more dedication and commitment. And, you know, that came out of grief when I was in Poland and my dad was very sick. I would take moments and afternoons of just sit and make art just to kind of feel something, you know, like a heat, like a moment of quiet or play or exploration. And in the weeks after he died, literally, I think 5 or 6 weeks after he died, I made this drawing that is hanging up right there. That was a visualization of the journey of my father's life and how it intersected with mine. And it sort of opened up this entire series of work that I've been working on for the last 4 years. So there's just been things that have like little sprouts and seeds of me and life that have started to grow in that, in the wake of that experience of just realizing like, yeah, you, nothing should be put on hold. Nothing should be saved for later. Like if you can do it now, do it now.
And you are doing that. You live in Brooklyn. You spend time in New Mexico and you're able to go see your mom in Poland and your boyfriend, and you spend time in Germany.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm sure a few years ago, you never would have thought that all of this, right?
And
your life feels balanced and you have more time. There's a lot more ease and grace about your life.
Yes. I think it's just an awareness of how precious time is. And it's both in terms of our length of our lifetime and also each day. There's only so much you can do in each day. And I feel like I always have this habit of like feeling at the end of a day like I didn't do enough. And I'm realizing that that's just, it's a habit and a pattern, and so much about kind of the quality of the time that we spend and how we spend it and where we focus our energy is so, so, so important.
If you could share three things with our listeners that you do or you feel may help them along this journey.
Oh boy.
Start with one. The other two will roll.
Okay. I always, whenever a question like this gets asked, I'm always like, okay, first answer, best answer. So the first thing that comes to mind is this sense of trust the bumps, trust the pivots, trust the cracks. Like pay attention, listen. You know, it's like I said, it's easy to say that in hindsight, but you kind of know when something is, when something comes up, either, you know, an email from a friend saying they have an office they want to rent out or something arises, there's a part of us that knows that that particular event or thing is ripe with possibility in some way, shape, or form. And so I think just staying open and trusting that, yeah, things are not going to go the way you think, but they're not supposed to.
It's not always how it looks. We want it to look a certain way. And a lot of times,
we
it's
just
something completely different, and that is so much better.
Yes, we don't know. You know, you kind of set an intention that you want your life to go in a certain way. Just be open to getting there kind of circuitously, if that's how you pronounce the word. Or, just it's good, I think, to know what you want and feel like you want to move in a certain direction, because that moves you, that propels you to act. But just stay open and trust that things always happen. They always happen. Everything is always shifting and evolving. And just, pay attention to all those big ones and small. I mean, the small ones are the key ones in a way. So that's one or two. I don't know. I could do more.
And I feel part of it for you. And I love that you have a heart in your logo. It's resting in our heart. You know, in Chinese medicine, all healing takes place through the heart.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, that is our connection, our connecting point with the divine. You know, anytime I meditate or whatever, it's always this sense of something expanding within me, not just from the front, but from back in all directions.
Yes.
And I feel that if we can just take a few moments out of the day, when we say we don't have time, that is when our soul is screaming at us to say, you create. If there is an illusion that there isn't time.
Yeah.
It's just that the priorities have been arranged. We just have to rearrange them. But I know for me is going into my heart and saying, how may I show up this day to be the best that I can be, to be the best and receive abundance in all areas of my life? How may I be of service? And as I had on my website, who we wish to become resides within the potential of who we are. It's there. It's always there.
Yeah. And I think you're speaking to such an important piece too, the sense of, I guess that would have been my number two, is something that I'm still learning how to do is, just kind of giving yourself moments, and they could be little pockets and sometimes bigger pockets, to just let all the mental doing, all the physical doing, just let that drop. Because I think that allows you to tune into yourself and also nourish yourself and love yourself and kind of care for yourself in a very different way. To just pause and, like you said, go take a walk and have a cup of coffee.
I think sometimes it's as simple as quieting one's mind to say, what would nourish me right now?
Yes.
And we'll always get that mm-hmm. little whisper, like, what would be best for me right now? And again, sometimes we don't hear anything because we're just meant to be in silence. And then we'll get little urges like, oh, go roast a chicken. Seriously. Go make a bubble bath.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
Or call your brother, you know?
Yeah. And allow yourself to hear it and allow yourself to give it to yourself, whatever it is.
And what will come through a lot of times is that people don't realize you will actually hear, you are deeply loved.
Mm.
We are deeply loved. I cannot tell you, I will be in the middle of something, and I will hear, do you realize how deeply you are loved?
Mm.
I'm like, and now I'm like, oh, thank you. I do not realize that. You know, we show up for others a lot. But I think it's also so important to know that we are loved.
Yeah.
And sometimes hearing it from the realm around us or above us, you know, I hear my brother David at times. I was chatting my brother that passed, and he's like, you're doing good, kid. He's like, don't worry, sis. He used to call me sis. I can tell when he shows up. He's like, sis, it's all good. It's all good.
Well, it's so interesting. That's such a beautiful and such a simple phrase to hear. And when I hear you say that, what that brings up for me, if I were to hear that and really hear it truly in my body, which I try to do, is that it allows you to then just be like, there's nothing I need to do or have to do right now to get anything, prove anything, strive for anything. I can just ease up for a minute, because that it's so easy for us to feel like we need to control everything and do anything to be okay.
You will never hear spirit in a state of doing. You will never hear the voice of the divine, or if you refer to it as God, you cannot. It's a state of being that is the feminine in all of us. It's that pause. It's that softness to like allow something to come through.
Yeah. That reminds me, there's a beautiful Mary Oliver poem that you might know about her going down to the beach and having a conversation with the ocean that very much talks about this. I wonder if I could find it really quick, or I'll send it to you. But yes, very much about that.
Do you have any closing words for our lovely listeners or lovely, sweet lovelies?
I don't know if I can wrap it all up in a pretty bow, but I feel so grateful to have the opportunity to have this conversation with you. I feel like you and I could easily talk for another 2 hours as we do. I think what I just feel so grateful for in this moment is this, the ability to have a moment like this with you, to be able to reflect on things that are not really so much on my, you know, surface of my awareness as I go about all of my doing. And so just to, what that can do for each of us, to just be aware so truly, like all the events of our lives that have brought us into this moment and how many incredible things are constantly happening to bring us into this moment and what else is still ahead. And just to really just, I guess, like, the flow of life is a wild, crazy ride, but it also is beautiful.
I want to thank you so much for being here, sweetheart.
Thank you.
It's so good to finally have you here. And it's been a while since we've seen each other in person. We have to make that happen. I have to give you a big hug.
Thank you.
I want to thank all our listeners. Thank you, sweet ladies. It means the world to me that you listen in. You are grace in my heart. This is why I do what I do on the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. And I extend to all of you such love. be kind to yourself. Really know that you are deeply loved and the divine is always looking out for you in your best interest. You know, the higher power is there to support you on this journey, not to screw you over or punish you, but just, it's true, but the angels are there to help you. So I extend a lot of love and grace. And until we meet again, you take good care. Take sweet care of your little, sweet, precious, powerful, amazing hearts. And thank you for joining me today on the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. Be well.